Welcome to Be the Difference.
Presented by Back to Back Ministries, continuing to be a voice for orphan and vulnerable children around the world.
We share stories of everyday people who are being the difference in the lives of others. I'm your host, Sammy Summerlin, and I'm here with my co-host, Chris Cox.
No, I love having guests on this podcast. I also love the conversations that we get to have when we're just bringing up a stat or an idea and just having a conversation with each other. And that's what we get to do today.
Yeah, I do too. And I actually had a conversation the other day. I was looking for some feedback and asking a group of people about these conversations in particular and asking, are they worthwhile and should we keep having them? And the response I got was really encouraging. She said, I love getting to hear a statistic that I don't know where else I would learn it and getting a little more context on some of the interviews that you're then going to have later. So we hope you all are feeling that way too, because we love getting to talk about this and bring up different topics that sort of frame our later conversations.
Yeah, it's a culture of Back to Back to just be constant learners.
Yeah.
And I think as being constant learners around the content and the relationships that we have here within this organization, it also gives us access to statistics or information or conversations that I started to recognize everyone doesn't always have access to this. Like we kind of get a special look into a conversation around humanity. And I love that we get to bring that then to a larger audience. And we're hopeful that you as the listener can take something that you hear from here, bring that up at a dinner table or getting coffee and just introduce others to information or ways to be human that you're hearing about through these little mini talks that we have.
Yeah. So today, looking forward, currently it's the month of April, but looking forward into May. May is Foster Care Awareness Month. And we've had a couple different conversations with people who participate in different aspects of foster care here. We're going to do that again this month as we get ready for next month. So I thought, well, let's just start the conversation with learning a little bit about foster care in the United States specifically. It has different expressions all over the world, but in the United States. So I looked at some stats. So currently in the United States, there are over 437,000 children in foster care.
Wow.
So nearly 500,000 in the United States. And more specifically, foster care means that the child, for whatever reason, is part of a system that places them with someone other than their family of origin, their parent who they started life with. But sometimes that means that's a relative. And that would also be a foster care situation. Mm-hmm. So currently, of those about 500,000, I dug a little deeper. 45% are with non-relative foster families, what we might think of more traditionally. Mm-hmm. 32% with a relative, 32%. And then 23% live in institutions, group homes, or a pre-adoptive setting. So that's a variety of settings. So already it expands my view of what I may have traditionally thought of foster care. But I just threw a lot at you, so I'll toss that back to you. Either how do those stats strike you, or how does that stack up with maybe your first understandings of foster care?
Interesting. I would say as you were sharing the numbers per capita statistically, I was surprised that the number is not higher based on what I sense is general population numbers in the United States. 400,000 feels lower. And then I had feelings about the feeling that 400,000 children displaced from, you know, a family of origin or a connection, which means something traumatic has happened.
Yeah.
400,000 is more than enough. Like that. So I was intentional even with myself of like, wow, that number feels low based on our population as a country. And then it feels high when I think about the value that each individual child has. I would not want that displacement, that trauma, those experiences, that separation, all the things that you have to process when you are going through a season where you can't find what is going to be consistent and sustainable. I don't want that for 400,000 children.
Yeah. Yeah. That, when you bring it to the human aspect of it and think about the individual children, how many individual stories that is. And you and I both have a deep understanding of the impact of trauma and the ways in which it is deeply traumatic to be separated from your family of origin, regardless of what has happened, sometimes it is trauma that causes the separation, but that separation in and of itself is also traumatic. So when you think about, when I think about, I was reflecting on like, where did I first learn about foster care? How did I start to first bring my, build my belief system around it? I actually pinpointed, I think my first experience of it or awareness of it was a Mary-Kate and Ashley movie.
Okay.
Which places me squarely in the millennial age group.
Yes.
That thrived in the 90s on things like Mary-Kate and Ashley movies. But if you're of my generation, you may remember a movie called It Takes Two. And I did have to relook up the plot today just to make sure I was correctly remembering. But it is one of the primary characters. I don't know if it's Mary-Kate or Ashley, but one of them in the movie is an orphan. Mm. She's framed as an orphan. So the title they give her. She is living with a family in foster care. She has a social worker. This family wants to adopt her, but they're framed as this really like secretive, kind of like not great parenting family that just wants to collect all these kids so that they can get money from the system. And she doesn't want to live with them. It's this really bad place. And then she goes away to camp and she finds her twin sister who happens to be her long lost sister and is the daughter of a billionaire. So all things work out well for her. And she doesn't have to go live with this horrible foster family. So I was thinking about that and I thought, oh, wow. Like my first framework for what is a foster care setting framed it as negative, something that nobody would want, and people who are trying to take advantage of a system.
Yeah, it's the villain in a movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Literally. They're the bad guys.
Yeah.
And then I thought, how pervasive is that message and how much has that seeped into not only my first original understanding, but also into our cultural conversations around foster care and foster parents. Do you have a Mary-Kate and Ashley origin story?
That would be for my younger sister, who is about 11 years younger than I am. She is also a Mary-Kate and Ashley child. Like I think most of her childhood is Full House and other things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mine's more personal. I was eight or nine, and my aunt and uncle received a foster placement, and I had no idea what that was. I'm from my family on that, my mom's side is large. So I have like 14 cousins, first cousins, all hanging out all the time. And then when my aunt brought in a baby, I mean, baby, like 6 month old baby. Mm. And his name was Chris as well. And something gelled between he and I, even in that,
he's
to where
buddy.
I could get him to go to sleep. Mm. And so we'd be at this farmhouse and there, that my visual image when you ask the question is me laying on a couch as like a 9 year old who just come in from, you know, playing in the sun. And there's this little 6 month old like sleeping on my chest. And that was my first experience. And I can remember the experience of going back to that farmhouse and not being prepared that he had been reconnected to his family.
Yeah.
And there was no goodbye. Like there was no nothing. So it was this. And then for protection, I have no idea what in that scenario, like what county or town you're even from. So it was just connection, deep collaboration in like nap time and then separation.
Did that in your mind frame foster care as something that was positive or negative?
I think the framing was both. Positive from the vantage point that I was being given as to why he was with my aunt was an affirmation of what she and my uncle could provide. Negative from the perception that I was given over why he would need to be somewhere else.
Yeah.
So family of origin framed in a certain way as to why he would need to be with us. And so that, so it was both of a, this is like, oh, cool. This is what some people can do to provide. And oh no, some people are bad people for what they do to their kids.
Yeah. And see, I feel like that is a thing that I've had to like dismantle and rebuild
in
my own views about foster care, because I had that initial framing of like, ooh, foster parents can be bad people or like people who want to just collect kids, like Mary Kay and Ashley taught me. So then learning like, okay, people who engage in foster care in many, many, like the majority of circumstances do it out of a deep compassion and move to act and move to open up their home and move to sacrifice so much in order to care for somebody else.
Yeah.
So there was that undoing and rebuilding. But then that piece that you just said of like, okay, how is the family of origin framed in all of
it? Yeah.
Was the other piece that I had to undo and rebuild, because it can take this, I could have this mentality of like, oh no, they went back to the bad guys.
Yeah.
And how quick are we to paint bad guys and good guys? But
yeah, no, that's what I, as you were talking, that's what I was picking up on, is like how this foster care conversation fits a meta narrative that we always have to have a villain and a hero.
Right.
As opposed to, as humans, we're probably both on an hourly or daily basis. Like that's, you know, and you're and I, our framework comes from a foundation on the way of Jesus. The way of Jesus is actually to teach that all humans have good moments and bad moments and are in need of one who only had self-sacrificing great moments in order for us to keep belonging.
Yeah.
But we pin each other in these little boxes. Mm-hmm. And even a concept like foster care, we either put it in a good or a bad. And you and I have both had to frame that conversation of, there are things in a system that has had foster care as long as America, as the United States has had, that we would go, ooh, are we sure? Because there could be reunification and family of origin, and maybe we didn't have to have any type of separation on the front end. And we've both also watched a country like Mexico introduce foster care in a powerful, healing way, because institutionalized orphanage was
the only solution.
The only solution. Yeah. And so I have conflict. I'm like, here, I question foster care. Here, I go, wow, that's a great solution to this other thing. And so it's always this conversation around good and bad, instead of saying, what is our reality and what are we working toward?
Yeah. And especially when it comes to thinking about like families of origin, what changed everything for me was actually getting to know people who had been separated from their children, learning their stories, hearing about their experiences, seeing them as made in the image of God, and realizing in a lot of cases they had their own deep wounds, just like we all do, and had made certain experiences happen in their own lives, or just things that happened to them that then led to this. And I think when I can remember and see the image of God in everyone that is a part of this foster care story, it changes the way that I look at even stories of reunification.
Yeah, our back-to-back Cincinnati team spends a lot of time around the fracturing of familial relationships or systems around families. And I've landed that everything belongs in one of three buckets, either prevention, intervention, or reconciliation. We're always doing one of those three. And I want to continue driving toward providing relationships and resources for all three, depending on where the story is. Because there are some things we can prevent. There are traumatic experiences and fracturing and separation and disconnection that we can prevent by providing a family a resource. Even as simple one story where the separation happened over lack of car seats in the backseat of a car. And so there was a separation of a family sticking together. I'm like, we can prevent that happening by providing connections and resources with car seats. Maybe a family gets to stick together. There's intervention when a bad thing happened and we need to intervene. And maybe there's some pause and some separation for healing and resetting moving forward. And then some things take a longer separation. And we're working on a reconciliation strategy. But in my 25 plus years of being connected to children and youth with hard stories, I've yet to find a child who doesn't want reconciliation with their childhood and their story, and almost always with that family of origin. And so if we don't put all three kind of into the conversation, we do a disservice to a resource like foster care. we also do a disservice to children and caregivers in figuring out what part of the healing story do we get to be a part of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like so much of the work that I'm most a part of these days is equipping foster families mm-hmm. so that they can receive someone into their home. And one of my favorite parts of the training is when we get to have a real conversation about how do we speak about, relate to, and engage with the child's family
yeah.
and what is best for the child in that case. And I feel like that's one of the moments in training when I see a lot of light bulbs go off of, one, I love getting to equip foster families because they're doing a really hard thing.
Absolutely.
And they've stepped in and sacrificed a ton. And I also love getting to just bring a little bit of perspective of that there's someone on the other side of this that doesn't actually have to be like your opposite enemy.
Yeah,
like
right.
They can be part of this story in a way too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When we can consider that all of us are playing a role in a story of healing,
mm-hmm.
then the options all become viable. Sometimes healing comes through adoption. Beautiful stories.
Yeah.
Beautiful stories of healing. Sometimes healing comes through reunification.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful stories of healing. Sometimes stories are healed through a fracturing of a systemic thing or an intergenerational thing that's happened over and over. And a child stays in that foster care system. But because of the wraparound care that happens, they become an adult and their child doesn't enter into that system.
Yeah.
And they break a cycle.
Yep.
All of those things can be part of a story of healing. And when they get pitted against each other as enemy of like, what's the best thing? The best thing is for God's children to always be taken care of.
Yeah.
That it's full stop there. And sometimes that requires all of these different things working together. Yeah, I've had that moment too, where even in a training, a foster parent recognized that when a child was coming to their door, the emotions were quite different on the two sides mm-hmm. of the door. And I think that's something to always mm-hmm. hold really, really well, is that one child is processing the trauma and fracturing of a relationship that is happening as they walk up the steps to a door. Another is waiting with excitement and anticipation, is that this is what we trained for. This is what we sacrificed for. I switched bedrooms so that you mm-hmm. could have your own space. Like there's this energy and excitement, and then the door opens and these two emotional worlds meet each other. And it often doesn't live up to what either had hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
And by explaining that and entering that in of like, no, you're just entering into a story of healing right here. Then we can take a deep breath and we can all play the part that we need to. Because 400,000 is still too large of a number.
Yeah. And I think that's really the heartbeat of Foster Care Awareness Month, is understanding
yeah.
the numbers and realizing these are individual children with lives and stories who will then grow up mm-hmm. to have children. And there is a responsibility to care for them. And I believe like in Psalms, there's a psalm that says God sets the lonely in families.
Mm-hmm.
That is part of the way that he facilitates healing, and we get to be a part of putting kids in families. But that means that we can be a support to foster families. That means we can grow in our own awareness. That means we can just take apart some of our beliefs and put them back together mm-hmm. in a little bit different way with new information. Take a hard look at what we really think and where our lens started.
Yeah. This is a powerful conversation. And I hope that it sparks you as a community around us to consider what it looks like for the lonely to experience family.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't wait for you to hear from the voices that we're going to share with you in this next month too, because we have some really great, insightful difference makers that you're going to hear from.
And we'll see you on the next episode.